Daisy Bonham here. My apologies for leaving you guys in the lurch at the end of the last episode, thinking maybe I was dead. I am not dead, thankfully. But everything you heard up until the end, me arriving at the cabin, finding Dorian Grizel's plans for Port Possession, and him appearing behind me, really happened. What happened next was thankfully recorded, thanks to the pocket I'd stitched on the inside of my jacket and the recorder tucked away inside it. I won't belabor this any longer, since you probably know what the outcome of this scenario is already if you pay attention to the news. Here's how it happened. After he grabbed me, I screamed and was knocked out. When I woke up, I was tied to a chair in the center of the cabin. Groggy, my eyes opened, and in front of me was Chip, or Dorian, or whatever you want to call him. He was sitting in a chair facing me. He looked calm, and I would almost say peaceful, if not for the 9mm gun in his hand. Behind him, a table with the plans I had spotted before he grabbed me. Plans to do something horrible.
What are you doing, Chip?
Oh, I think we can call it a day on Chip, don't you think? I know you know who I am.
Dorian Grizel.
Funny thing is, I never made much effort to hide it. I just trusted that most people don't ask questions and don't bother to double check. I find that if you walk into a room, shake someone's hand, and smile, they'll believe just about anything you say. Because otherwise they just think you are some kind of monster.
Are you a monster?
What would an ocean be without a monster lurking in the dark? It would be like sleep without dreams. You know who said that?
I don't really care who said it.
But you care about what I'm trying to do here.
When you're planning on hurting people, and what you did to Alicia...
I didn't mean for that. She showed up with those papers from De Bruin telling me that I'd have to move out. Without any care for where I went? So some corporation could move in and destroy this town? No, no. I couldn't have that. And I am sorry that I took it out on her, but... sometimes I can't control this thing inside.
It's just a coffee shop. Who cares? Why does that matter so much? Why does it matter what happens to Port Possession? So a bunch of big companies move in. So what?
So what? Oh, come on. You're better than that. You figured out who I am, so you must know all about me.
I don't. I only just realized it.
Oh, right. The magical medium and her message from beyond. Yeah. I listened to that episode. It was fun, but you don't really expect people to believe that really happened.
You heard what was said. I didn't edit anything.
You're really sticking to that story, huh? All right, fine. I'll indulge you. Hello. Dorian Grizel. Nice to meet you. What was it that finally tipped you off? The rap sheet?
That and a photo.
Yeah. A hair dye only does so much. So, you know, things were not good for me back east. Truth is, things were never good. Shit parents, alcoholics, drug addicts. Left me to fend for myself in New York City. Ugh, putrid hellhole, teeming with filth and greed. That's not a beacon on a hill, it's a garbage pit. So after my last arrest, I knew I had to get out of there. Start fresh, you know? So I made for the furthest place I could think of in the continental United States. The Olympic Peninsula. Ain't nobody from New York looking for you up here. I took the ferry over, and when I took two steps into Port Possession, I knew this was where I wanted to be. So I dyed my hair, changed my name, and pretty soon I was just another local business owner in town. Anywhere else in this country, I would have been found out in 30 seconds, but that's what's so great about Port Possession. They just trust you. Take you at your word. They don't go poking around looking for holes in your story. I meant it when I told you this is a good town full of good people. I meant every word of it.
Then why get involved? Why fight with the mayor? Why not just disappear into the crowd?
Seriously, for a reporter, you really don't do well with context clues sometimes. This is a good town full of good people, and it should stay that way. I was very clear about that when we first met.
Except the Dabroons and the original families.
Exactly. When I started learning about the history of this town, it became so clear to me. Everything bad that's ever happened here is because of them. Especially the Dabroons. There's so much blood on their hands. I'm surprised the passage isn't still red from all the times they tried to rub it off. This town is perfect as it is. It's everything I ever wanted. Don't you see? It's exactly how it should be.
But that's not how the mayor and city council see it.
No. They want to homogenize it. Turn it into every town USA. From there, the slack-jawed idiots will move in and bring crime with them and drugs. Ugh. Worst dregs of society.
Pretty sure that's already here.
For someone tied to a chair by a person holding a gun in the middle of the woods, you sure do like to play things fast and loose. Yes, Daisy, I'm not perfect. But when I came here, I knew I was going to be different. Things were going to be different. The world my parents gave me, that's back east. This is my world. This is my town, and I will do anything to keep it as is.
Including blow up City Hall.
Oh. You got a better peek at my plans than I thought. Yes. Okay, I'm gonna blow up City Hall. Makes me sound a bit like a Bond villain saying it out loud like that, but it's just the easiest way to make sure all those evil people are gone. Then Port Possession can really be the town of dreams.
You're insane.
No. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results? That's insanity. That's what happens every time we elect a Dabroon as mayor or fill the government with Berries and Blaines. They line their pockets however they see fit and screw all the good people over. Over and over and over. So it's up to me to just eliminate the threat once and for all. Then everyone will be happy. Ice cream shops and restaurants and movie theaters that have lined the streets of Port Possession for decades will continue to do so. The people whose families have called this place home for generations will be able to do so for generations to come. Why don't you see this? Why doesn't anyone see this?
So why did you recreate the lifeboat? What does that have to do with any of this?
Are you joking? That lifeboat is the bane of my existence. Screwed up the timing of everything. I was going to take them all out on the day the lifeboat showed up. All of a sudden, this place is swarming with police. FBI show up, then you start your podcast. I had to rethink everything. And in the meantime, that let Dabroon and his cronies push their plans forward. It's going to wait until you left. After that girl showed up. Oh, that poor girl. Again, I am so sorry about that, but... But after that, I knew it was now or never.
But you put Alicia in a boat the same way.
I figured it'd buy me a couple days. Your cooked-up theories have everyone thinking all sorts of strange things about the lifeboat. Thought maybe it'd be another breadcrumb for you people.
So, wait, it's just a coincidence?
Sure. Maybe you should ask Shalitza when you see her.
Chip.
I'm sorry, Daisy. I truly am. You know I can't let you walk out of here. It's too important.
Chip, please.
You never should have come here. Well, I guess if you really are some reincarnated dock worker, then I guess you didn't have a choice, did you?
Please, put the gun down.
Goodbye.
That's the part of the story you were probably aware of already. Police kicked down the door of a cabin in an isolated section of Port Possession and found known felon Dorian Grizel pointing a gun at reporter Daisy Bonham, who was tied to a chair. They opened fire on Grizel, killing him instantly. Inside, they found intricate plans along with a crate full of explosives meant to blow up the Port Possession City Hall, with the mayor and all members of the city council inside of it. They also found illegal firearms and ammunition stashed away in a shed behind the cabin. Turns out, they knew to go there thanks to Linda Melson Blaine, who had phoned Police Chief Babers soon after I left. In the coming days, they would tie Grizel to the death of Alicia Mahoney thanks to copious amounts of DNA evidence left in the local drip coffee shop. Days later, the coffee shop remains closed and will likely never reopen. The building sold to developers will either be entirely gutted and renovated or torn down altogether to make way for something shinier. In spite of everything that's happened in Port Possession recently, Mayor De Bruin and the City Council are moving forward with their plans to sell the sleepy town's past and present for a future that will look very different. In a strange way, it almost feels like there was something to be said for Dorian's point of view. His methods were unconscionable, but that doesn't mean he didn't have a point. One part of the mystery was solved, but the mystery that brought me here remained just as unknown as before. I had learned so much about Port Possession. I think I've learned quite a bit about Sholitza, Roger Margeron, and how the two of them were involved with the Cumberland, but I still had no whys or hows or wheres. Everyone in Port Possession had closed their doors to me. Even Linda Melson Blaine, who kindly checked up on me following the harrowing experience, but then just as kindly asked me not to come around anymore. So I'm left with no one to turn to for any more answers. Well, no one alive, at least.
Daisy, it is such a pleasure to see you again. I read about what happened. Thank goodness you're okay.
Thanks, Beth. Valeria, it's been a hell of a week.
I'm so glad you came back. I know Mr. Menshnikov is as well.
Yeah, well, you and Mr. Menshnikov are all I've got left at this point. It wasn't that long ago that I would have laughed at one of my friends if they went to a place like this once, let alone twice. Now, look, I'm still a reporter who deals in facts, but if I've learned anything while here, it's that you have to look for the truth anywhere you can. I followed Valeria back to the same room as before. Lacey was there, sitting on the same comfy pillow. She rose to give me a hug. A real bear hug, like she was hugging an old friend that she was desperately happy to see once more. I suppose that might be true.
Now, if you two are up for it, I would like to try something I've never done before.
No offense, but you're not my type.
Oh, you're very funny. But what I was actually going to suggest was that you both go under trance at the same time so that Mr. Menshnikov can communicate with Sholitza and Roger in unison.
I thought Roger didn't want that.
If I really am Roger, or he and I share some kind of connection, then I feel like if he wants to help me understand why I'm here, he'll do this.
Ask for that, Daisy. As you lie down and close your eyes, ask him to do that for you.
Lacey and I laid down. I left the recorder running and I started asking Roger in my head to do this. For Sholitza, for Lacey, and for me. As I did it, I felt myself drifting away, like how Lacey once described seeing things through a movie screen in the distance that kept getting farther and farther away. I swear on anything you put in front of me that I don't remember anything that occurred after that.
Goodness me, Mr. Menshnikov here. Thank you for sharing your energy with me as you seek the truths of the many lives that have been, the many lives to come, and most important of all, the life that you are living today. I ask you who are with me today in this room to please speak your names, so that we may have a little chat.
I am Sholitza, daughter of Shotok, of the Skonomish people.
Roger Margeron.
Sholitza? And Roger? What a blessing to share this space with you. I feel your connection. It radiates across time and space. I honor you both.
Where am I?
Roger, you are in a safe place where no harm can come to you and only love can reach you.
Roger.
Sholitza?
I am sorry. I didn't know, I swear.
I thought you were a good man.
I wasn't a good man. But I was a good man when I was with you.
Sholitsa, can you explain what happened to you?
That day, Roger saw me, with a blade in my hand. Hate in my eyes. He knew what I had to do. He knew why I had to do it.
She was going to kill Debrune. I just knew it. I loved her, and I knew that look in her eye. She was going to do it to prevent the settlers from taking more Skanomish land. What she didn't know was that her brother, Laxamoa, had already made a pact with Debrune to do so, and it involved making sure she didn't intervene, no matter what.
He took me. Roger. He grabbed me. He told me I had to leave. If I had loved him, I would do it for him. When he told me about Laxamoa, I was heartbroken. But I knew Roger would help me. He was a good man.
I smuggled her aboard that ship, the Cumberland, found her a spot below deck where she could stay, told her I would meet her in San Francisco. We'd run off together, start a life, away from this place. Then I found out what Maxwell had in store for the ship. Some banker, Lancaster, was heading back to San Francisco, was going to tell people not to invest in port possession. Debrune wanted him and his whole family shanghaied, but not until the boat was already at sea. I couldn't let that happen without knowing Sholitsa was okay. So I knocked out one of the crew and took his place.
Waters were choppy. Darkness everywhere. Suddenly, I heard gunshots, screams, people running, more gunshots, then light. Roger was standing before me. He pulled me up and told me to stay behind him. He took me to a lifeboat, handed me a gun.
I told Sholitsa to get in the boat and wait for me. I would be back. Gave her my revolver.
When he returned, he was with three men. Suddenly, I realized what they were doing. I knew what Roger did for those men. Debrune, Maxwell, I did not think he would do it to me. But he was there, talking with the other criminals about me.
I had hoped to sneak off with Sholitsa, but some of Maxwell's other men saw me, surrounded me. I tried to reason with them, but they wouldn't listen. Two of them jumped down into the boat to get her. I tried to stop them. Then the shots rang out.
I shot them. Both of the men in the boat. I was furious. I just kept shooting until the gun was empty. I looked up and saw Roger standing there, looking down at me. Then looking down at the blood in his chest.
It was no worse a fate than I deserved. The things I had done, the men I had doomed. Suppose I was glad it had been her to do it. She was the last thing I saw. I was glad for that.
He fell into the boat. I screamed. The lifeboat had become disconnected somehow, and we were floating away from the ship. I watched it turn away from the land, towards the ocean. Towards another continent. I watched it disappear into the darkness. And then the tide took us away from the land. I think I knew deep down that Roger was trying to help me. But in that moment, I was so afraid. Death came slowly for me. Days later, I suppose that was fair.
Goodness me, bless you both for sharing the story. Can you look upon this boat and see where it has been all these years?
Rocks.
A cavern.
Darkness.
Quiet.
Goodness me. Thank you.
A few days ago, the Canadian Coast Guard identified a rocky section of Victoria Island that had broken loose recently. The space inside appeared to have been large enough for a small ship, say, a lifeboat, to become lodged inside at some point. And the opening, caused by erosion, was just big enough for that lifeboat to have followed the tide back out. No one's been able to say 100% that this was the location of SS Cumberland Lifeboat No. 5 for the past 150 years, but it's the closest thing we've gotten to an answer yet. As for what happened to the Cumberland, Sholitsa's description of a ship being led out to the Pacific Ocean is perhaps the best answer we'll ever get. The implications are horrifying, but they always were when it came to the fate of the Cumberland and its lost souls, weren't they? After our session was over, I thanked Valeria and asked her to thank Mr. Menshnikov for his help. She said business was starting to pick up thanks to the podcast. Lacey and I grabbed a coffee and listened to the recording, talking about the experience and how it made us feel. We parted as friends and promised to keep in touch. She also promised to start traveling a bit more. Despite their misgivings about the side avenues I followed my investigation down, my editors at BuzzRocks are thrilled by the download numbers and site traffic. They're already asking me what I'll be looking into next. Honestly, I'm still not ready to leave this place behind yet. I headed back to Port Possession one last time before my flight, not to meet with anyone, but just to walk down Waterfront Street, stroll past the old buildings, take in the smells and sounds of this aging town. As I do, I imagine myself as Roger. If I were, in fact, he, or if he were I, then I wonder what we made of all this. I can't imagine myself doing some of the things he did, but I also can't imagine how hard that life must have been. A small port town in the middle of nowhere full of schemers, dreamers, and criminals. You did what you could to survive, and even then, it usually wasn't enough. I suppose that's the thought that sticks with me as I see all of the going out of business signs in shop windows and sold placards lining buildings. The man I knew as Chip Kuznick said this was a good town, full of good people, and it should stay that way. I don't necessarily think any of that is true, but I also think that's besides the point. Port Possession's founder had big ideas, big dreams. In the end, the town became what it became because that's what it was meant to be. It wasn't the den of horrors some of those old stories would make you believe. It wasn't the perfect little seaside village Chip wanted it to be. And now, as the new pushes out the old, maybe Port Possession is meant to be something else. Change isn't necessarily wrong. It's just change. And it doesn't really care whether you like it or not. It comes all the same. I'm Daisy Bonham. This has been Passage.